Dear friends, so we got to start here. So please bring your body and your mind back and relax your body and your mind while I invite you to Isabel. So that is how we are starting this class. So, dear friends, so today is March 1st already. Oh, it's the year. It's rolled by so fast. When you come, we already passed 2 months of this year. And when we look back, and 30 years, 40 years passed by quick. If you are 50, you look back and say, maybe like yesterday. I look back, it's my 40 years, like just yesterday. But you look ahead, it seems like long. But when you look back, I say, what did I do yesterday? It's just like that. And so we let our time go by without knowing it. And when we look back, and ask ourselves whether we change anything in ourselves or not. That is the practitioner. So when I tell this, and I have to tell you a story about a master. I think I told you this story already, but to refresh you again, this is a Zen story, and this master, he practiced day by day, night by night, and every day he practiced, and at the end of the day, he don't see anything strange from himself, and he cry. And nobody know why he cry. He's a master. And nobody know why he cry. One day his disciple asked, you are a master. How come that someday I see you crying, someday you not? You just like a baby. And I'm like that. And he tell his disciple, say that today I practice, but I didn't see anything change in myself, and the day come to an end already. So my day already passed. I didn't see any, and he cried. And someday he's very happy because he sees some change in himself. So he really honest with himself. But I don't know whether we are or not. Whether we are not. So we have to, as a practitioner, we have to be honest with ourselves. Nobody can be too honest with you, only you. You know that you really honest with your practice or not. Or we try to cover up our practice. Because the day passed by. So Dave just brought me a question that bring me up. He say, in Buddhist practice, he read one of Thay's book, and he called this Thay's teachings. He said, in Buddhist practice, we contemplate impermanence to help us touch the phenomenal world more deeply. And to release our notions and concepts. And when we touch things in themselves, then we see that they are quite different from our notions and concepts about them. So that's the quote he quote from the textbook. So the gist of impermanence in Buddhism is very crucial. It's very important. You have to contemplate day and night about these teachings in order to release our notions and concept about things. So we have a certain concept or certain ideas or notions about what we are or what things are, right? And then we have we fix that notions on things as impermanence, as permanent, no? And then we grasping to that. And then we don't see once we have grasping on the permanence of the things, of what things are, and then we hold on to that, grasp onto that. And thus it creates a lot of suffering for us. Right? That creates a lot of misunderstanding and suffering. So in Buddhism, we have the term called phenomena world. Phenomena world is the physical world, right? We call phenomena world. Thế giới. And that's how we live in our everyday life. We live in this world here, the physical world, the phenomenal world. So in the phenomenal world, we have day and night, right? And we have birth and death. We have right and wrong. So everything is going to pair. You have male and female. So we live in the world of duality, the world of duality, or the yin yang, the world of duality. It's always in pair. So for this example, for this pain, we have the head and the tail, right? It's always in pair here. We have white and black, like that. So that's the world we live in. But in that world is contained, once we penetrate the world of duality, then we can see the world of Dhammakaya. That's Dhammakaya here. We call Pháp giới. Dhammakaya here is the world of no birth and no death. And Dhammakaya, we call it Pháp thân. So they use the word things in themselves. Things, yeah, they are. Pattern. Things in themselves. Things in themselves. The nature of this pain is no birth and no death, right? The nature of it, things itself. But when we look at it, we can see that it's made up of many components, this pain, right? So that is we call the physical world, the world phenomena. So when we penetrate this world, the realm of the world of Dhammakaya, then you go, there is no male or female. Male and female is a conventional destination. We make it up. But we look deeply, we penetrate to look deeply the conditions, all the elements to make up this male and female be the same, right? Whether you are male or female, you have contained water, earth, fire, winds, air. But look at its own form, then it's different, right? The form of male and female is different. So we label it to call it. So normally we get stuck into this duality. We got stuck into that duality. So you practice in such a way, you have to penetrate this world. To penetrate that. Permeate is that. Thâm nhập pháp giới. So normally, the Buddha dwelt in this world. Dhammakaya, the nature of his own. And the practitioner who are enlightened, they dwell in this world most of the time. Even though they can see the same phenomena as us, but different. You can see this cup or this pen, the same, the person who enlightened and the person who are not enlightened, they see the same thing, but in the content of seeing is different. If you was to possess this pen, someone to grasp from you, then you what? What is coming from? What is going on in you? You either get a painful feeling, angry, panic, fear, right? Because you possess this, you say that it's your, it belongs to you. That's whatever. So like just for example, the jar, for example, they possess this pen, they, if someone grab from him, he cry or she cries, right? But as an enlightened being, they say that I'm just coming here to use it. It does not belong to me. I have the right to use it. If someone have the right to use the same, I'm not the owner of this pen, but I have the right to use it. You have the right to use it. Anybody can write this pen, and they have the liberate view. The view is liberating, but not possess. They live in the world, but they're not yet caught in the world. You see? But we live in the world, but we get caught in the world. That's the difference. That's the difference. Whatever we use, whatever comes to us, we get caught into that. And then we live in this here. For example, if this place, someone come to destroy, or someone to do damage to it, if I don't see it well, I can possess, I can be angry, I can be upset, I can retaliate. But I look in a different view and say, it belongs to everybody, it belongs to this earth. Why don't I have to be angry? The condition sufficient is manifest. But the condition is lacking, disappear. I don't have to grab on it. But when I use it fully. You have the right to take care of it. That's the difference. And so you encourage people to come and practice and work together and support each other and use fully together. That's the purpose of this place to manifest. The same thing, this pen. We use fully, and whenever is the condition insufficient, then it's disintegrate, then we don't have to be regret. We know the law of it, the law of impermanent. It's have the time to come together, and there's the time to stay some time to be using it, and there's time for it to rest. And you believe in yourself. So you have to understand these two words, Dhammakaya and phenomena world. That's the two. In Vietnamese, we call Thế giới and Pháp giới. And if you can draw in this Dharmakaya world too, it's an energy. Yeah. Everybody can have the right to be in that space. If your mind is lightened, your mind is liberated, your mind is not caught into everything, then you have that. You have that capability. You have that right. It's not belong to, it's belong to everybody. Even an ant. Even a dog. But because an animal is covered too many layers of their karma, and even ourselves, if we cover too many thick layers of grasping, of attachment, then you cannot, even though we live in this world, but we cannot get in touch with this world, ourselves. So when you are in the path, if you in touch in this path, the path of seeing that we already study, and it's connected to that, the path of you see the wisdom of non-duality, the wisdom of non-duality, of all phenomena. So that's why when on your path of meditation, how you do that? You have to contemplate day by day, movement by movement, second by second, in order to penetrate that space. It's there. But whether if you have a sharp eye, if you have a movement of non-disturbing in your mind, then you're able to get a glimpse of that. A glimpse of that. So whenever you're able to get a glimpse of penetrate this path of seeing, then you're able to transform, we call cognitive obscuration. Obscuration. We learn sợ trí chướng, or afflictions, cognitive afflictions. When you're able to penetrate this path, and then you're able to transform this here. Cognitive. Sợ trí chướng là cái học thức của mình đó. Cognitive here is another word, is knowable. Knowledge. Knowledge. Why is knowledge an obscuration? Why is knowledge an obscuration? Because we need knowledge, right?
I'm not clear on what you were talking about with knowable and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Is knowable different than knowledge?
No, same.
They're the same.
Mm-hmm. And you know it.
And it's an obscuration.
In Buddhism, we call it an obscuration.
Okay. What is obscuration?
Obscuration is an affliction.
Oh.
Or something that prevents you to penetrate this path. Is a hinder for you on the path. Because if you have a So when you have knowledge, then you have power. So because when we are studying about my ethic class, so I incorporate it. You call it position power. I try to make it into my practice. Charismatic. Speak charismatic. I think charismatic's power. And we have knowledge power. When you have knowledge, you have power, right? For example, if you are a lawyer, then you have knowledge and you have power. And we don't use carefully, this can be an obstacle in our practice. Then you have power, and power relate to what? Ego. See? Ego. And ego in Buddhism is an obstacle on your path. You can have, either you can...
What is the second one?
Charismatic? I don't know. Care.
IS after the R. Charisma.
Right? Yep. Charismatic power. That's what we learned in SD class, I just remember. I just finished my exam yesterday. And if you don't use your power, you can manipulate your powers very easily. And sometimes you know a certain thing and it's prevent you, block you to walk to that path. Because our knowing is not omniscient. So it's just partial of knowing. It's knowing something but it's partial. For example, a lawyer, they just only know in the era of lawyer. Right? So it's, their knowledge is still limited. And as therapy, we just only know on the area of therapies, what we know, the rules, we know things that we're supposed to do, still. So we are not able to go beyond that and know something, a lawyers or professors, and so the knowledge is still limitations in that. And once we get caught into this, and that's why it's preparing on the path, we can become afflictive. And then you become, and then you try to say that this is my knowledge, for example. And you become some, you possess that knowledge. Go now, me and mine now. It turns to my knowledge, right? Yeah. You possess that knowledge.
Also, there's a lot of labeling that goes on when we acquire knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
And then that narrows up
our thinking.
Yeah.
So that's why it's still in duality, you see. This duality is still labeling. And this knowledge is... and then I know this... And so sometimes you have knowledge over other people, and for example, if you are a therapist and your partner is lower than you, then you become what, a low self-esteem, right? And it's blocked. So you feel lower, inferior. This is a very practical example in everyday life. If you are a lawyer or you're a therapist and you have a partner and who is a teller, and you have the knowledge of the therapist, you have the knowledge of the lawyer. And then sometimes if you don't communicate well, then you turn into blocking your communication as a partner. And I know people like that. And they ruin their family because of this knowledge, of this power. At the beginning they feel happy, but as they move on in their life, and the husband or the wife either feel inferior to the partner, and slowly they do everything is blocking. It's blocking. So this position is here. Position power and knowledge power. So then because of the ego here, the ego is blocking. You see? The ego, either the partner, either the wife or husband has superior, feel superior. You might not see it, but you feel it. The energy. When you're around, right? You feel, I'm very superior to that person. You don't see it, but that person feel what you think. Invisible. And slowly they either withdraw themselves, or they block themselves from approaching you. Right? So that's create what? Suffering. Create suffering. And that's happened a lot in our everyday life. Every life. I think some of you might experience that, you know. Either you have more power or less power to your husband. So you have to know how to communicate to remove that barriers. So that's why it's cognitive or noble knowledge is an upgradation. But doesn't mean that it's something is, it's not good, but if you know how to use that knowledge. And don't let yourself get caught into the knowledge. That's important. So people can come to you, family member, even though you have a lot of knowledge, but you live a simple life. You live down to earth. That's the only thing that you're able to contemplate and practice. That's the only thing. If you have a learner, you place yourself on the sky, nobody can touch you. And there's people like that. And you isolate yourself, you see? You make yourself suffering, and you make the people around you suffering, pain. So that's why we call an aspiration is like that. So you have to practice in a way you remove all this here. You have the right to learn. You have the right to understand all this. But you don't have the right to put yourself as superior. If you do that, you create a boundary for yourself. You create your own, you imprison yourself. In prison. And that's many people, many knowledge people, they do to imprison themselves. Knowledge people. And I know and you know. And even ourselves, if we don't careful. If I was to possess a lot of Buddhist knowledge, and I said, oh, I'm too high, you know, I don't associate. And I imprison myself. I wrap myself around the ego. You see? I wrap myself up around this egoistic. I said, if I have a lot of knowledge about therapies, a lot of stuff, and then I don't have to clean the bathroom, for example. I don't have to cook. I have to wash. This is, but that's the simple things, but you can very much enjoy. If you were the lawyer, you say, I have a lot. So I go home and my partner have to cook for me, wash this for me, clean bathroom for me. And you not enjoy life. The only thing simple is to do the things that simple. Clean up the house, wash dishes, take care of the child. You remove that. And thus you become egoless. Not non-ego yet, not non-self, egoless. The self becomes smaller. Egoless. Slowly. And then slowly you become egolessness. Day by day, you have to practice. I remember when I was in Pampas, I went to see Tay and he's like very tired, yeah? And then I come to his hermitage and he said, you sit down, I cook and make tea for you. That's the real teaching for me. I never forget that in my life. I come to his hut and to be his attendant, but he said, you cook, you sit and I cook, and make sour soup, and he cooked very well. He make very good soup, and he chopped the cilantro and make tea, and he said, you see, that's, I don't see anywhere else. I can, you know, when you have a face, you go to public, you teach, then it's different. But when you come to, back to that, what are you doing? So you see, tri hành hợp nhất, có nghĩa là tri hành hợp nhất là mình you understand, your teaching and your practice go together. Tri hành hợp nhất. And you see, when you see like that, you never forget something like that, and you say, that's the real teaching. That's the real teaching. I never forget that in my life. So there is no longer an ego, a self, ego of teacher. I say, I'm teacher, I'm too high, but you are still no. Or you say, I'm too old, 80 years old, when you are just 40, so you should cook, you know, you can do. That's the things, that's the smallest thing, but you enjoy it the most. You are, that's where you touch life, you touch life. You don't touch life when the highest teaching, you touch life where life is, where earth is. I remember I tell you a story, and I read a book, Vietnamese book, but I don't know what the name, I just remember some gist of practice, and there's a story. There's a man, he say, I saw many serious practitioners as a Buddhist monk and nun, and somehow a few years they disrobe. They are very serious in practitioner. And somehow 10 years or 15 years down the road, they disrobe. And this teacher say that if you walk with your toe, how long can you walk? You walk with your toe, just like this, you know? And how long can you walk? Just like you practice seriously, like that. You walk with your toes, how long can you walk? You have to be, walk with your feet, touch the earth. That's the longest you can walk. So that means you have to go touch the earth. Walk with the 2 feet. Then that means you can walk long. And when I read that, I never forget in my practice. So you have to be practice with practical practice. So anyone make it clear, cognitive, aspiration, certitude. That means your understanding or your knowledge about block you, prevent you from the penetration of the things as they are. Even you study about Buddhism, Buddhism can block you on the path of penetration. I'm serious. If you get caught, I'm not trying to make Buddhism colorful. You have to be that earth. You can get caught into the teaching of the Buddha. Teaching the Buddha also a noble, a knowledge. Right? This can help you. But you don't know, we are caught into it. And if someone will just come down and, you know, who was to condemn Buddhism, who was to ruin, or was to gossip about Buddhism, if you was to give rise to anger, you was to do something harmful, then you get caught. And you know in the world many religious practitioners get caught into their own teaching. And we use the name of our own religions and kill our own human friends. And this is what they are called. Even you use the name of the teaching of the Buddha and go out and kill some people, you get caught. Doesn't mean you are practicing Buddhism. And then you see in the world, there's many people got caught into their own religious little teachings and go out and do many harm for our own human friends. We have right view. We already learned about right view. Whatever you do, you use the knowledge to make suffering to other human beings. Then you get caught. Because you use your knowledge power, yeah, to make suffering painful for other human beings. And this will cut you on your path. So you have to learn the teachings in the way. You have to be very wise, otherwise we can get caught easily. Doesn't matter what you learn about science, about teaching of the Buddha, about teaching of Jesus, we get caught into the power. So you have to be very, very careful and wise. Okay, anybody have any confusions about this? If you have confusions, you have not understand, raise your hands. Because you have to understand the teaching thoroughly in order to put the teaching into applications correctly. If not, I'm going to erase this and go to the second aspirations. So that is on the path of seeing. The next one is on the path of meditation that we have been studying the last two class.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Before you go on, if you could say a little bit more about how you can tell, how you can tell if you're whether this knowledge is blocking you. Maybe you gave examples earlier, but
Yes. If you get caught into cognitive obscuration or noble obscurations by you use your knowledge to pose your power on someone, even children or someone, and you cause them terribly pain or suffering in them, or in you, not in them, but in you also. For example, if you have the knowledge about science, for example. And if someone will say something wrong about science, or have a misconception about, or misunderstanding about science, for example, and inside, terribly, you get a lot of burning coal inside, then you get caught already. Right? You get caught already. At that moment, you get caught already. You should ask yourself. So you have to recognize what is going on in you at that moment. So you have to recognize that when we learn, right? Recognize or identify. Or acknowledge. It's different. What is going on in yourself at that moment? And then when you're able to acknowledge your own feelings, maybe hot, maybe irritated, maybe agonized yourself at that moment, then what you should do? So you should stop, slow it down. Right? Stop and slow it down. They use the word embrace. Use the word to embrace that. Hold that feelings in yourself. Don't act on that. That is the practice. Acknowledge, recognize, and embrace. Sorry, the second one is accepting. When you recognize that and you accept that, the feeling in you, jipnyen, and then you embrace, right? So the first thing is you see yourself, you use your own power of knowledge to impose that or suppress that on someone. And that moment you cause yourself feel unease already. And the first thing is you do is to recognize that. And then when recognized, normally we deny. So we recognize and we accept that. Instead of denying that I don't have that feeling, right? And then you embrace little by, you know, little by that feeling. Embrace that.
So the other word, what you're saying, we recognize the problem.
Yes.
And tell yourself that someone else problem, not you, so you don't have the anger.
Oh, you're still denying that. You know, if you say you was to blame externally, still, you still pseudo deny. You say that someone else, not me. Right? But actually some feeling is happening in you. So you have to accept that feeling, recognize that feeling. The next thing is emotional obscuration, that's what we're going to talk about. You have emotional going internally in your own body and your mind. So that's the next thing, that's what I'm talking about, is emotional obscurations. Yeah, emotional conflict inside us, internally. So you recognize it. Second one is you accept. You accept it. Third thing is you embrace. Warm up. You read Thay's book on the heart of the teaching of the Buddha, and he will go through detail about these five. This is the practice. the practice. Recognize, embrace, accept and praise. And then meditate. Now come to meditation. Reflect on that. So the fourth one is meditation or reflecting or you can meditate or reflect on that. To use the word looking deeply for meditation. This is the process you go through. And the fourth one, the fifth one is understanding. When you look deeply, you have an understanding about your own feeling, your own emotions, right? Even your emotion, you have to understand your emotion. If you have a strong emotion, then just like a big tornado typhoon. If you have a strong emotion, it's like that. It's calm. It's drop you around you. Path of meditations. Emotional obscuration. So when you penetrate the path of meditations, then you're able to penetrate emotional obscuration. This is more subtle and it's more difficult. It's that the emotional part. Because it have no form, but have the energy. So you have to meditate on this one. So when I talk about feeling affliction or klesha, they have different kind of klesha, six different kind of afflictions. And this is just like terminology, but we already learned it. So I name it. So you say, what is the six different kind of they call six great klesha, big klesha, klesha. Klesha.
Can you write that word down?
Okay. Klesha is affliction, okay? It's Sanskrit. Six different kind of klesha's. And the first one, every time we talk about it, called attachment, klesha. Attachment, they have different names like greedy, greed, desire. (Clears throat) And this kind of, if you have a strong desire of something, it's cover up your mind. It's cloud your mind, right? It's cloud your mind. And you can lead into, when you have attachment, lead into grasping, right? Grasping. And imagine that the more, the stronger of your attachment and the stronger the your grasping is, how much painful you will know. And the more you have attachment than you have grasping, the more your mind is narrow. You see the people who are stingy, their minds become very narrow, right? Narrow mind. So everything you want to be, it's for yourself. So now it's become self-possession. You see? You don't want to share it. Right? Sharing is very important. Sharing is caring. It's very important. So that's why imagine that everything you just try to hold it on. And I know this one of this friend is old. And even like a newspaper, small newspaper, they try to accumulate it, put it in their room. And day by day, they have no path to walk. Even like that, even a newspaper or something, advertisement, they just accumulate and put in the room. That's this attachment. Even a small thing, a newspaper. You see how our mind works there? Imagine that. How do you have space in your mind? You become physically ill and mentally ill when you do that. You don't feel much light in your body, in your mind. And you're afraid of losing it, of losing it. And how can, if you imagine that every day you live like that and the day of moment that you left this body, how can you able to go? And that's krisa. It's krisa. It's an affliction. Even the day that you go, even you have nothing, even the clothes you want to carry with you. You come to this world naked, you will go naked. And you have to practice it day by day, moment by that. Whatever you have in this world is sharing. That's why you have to practice impermanence in every second of your life. Every day I practice dying. I tell you that many times. It's helped me a lot. I stay here alone, I say I'm dying, so what's the matter? You know? And when you practice that, you see, you, day by day, you penetrate the teaching every second of life of your life. But you have to practice with wholeheartedly, and joyfully. And joyfully. You know? And when you practice that, you treasure your life. You treasure this earth. When you practice impermanence. You treasure every step that you make on this earth. That's, I'm guaranteed for that. For you, if you practice. You treasure every sentient being's life. You respect every sentient being's life. If you practice like that. Doesn't mean you practice non-attachment. Doesn't mean that you don't have responsibility. You are the most responsible person on this earth. Because you know how to care for yourself, and then you know how to care for others. And you know how to care for the earth. I bet you, if you don't know how to care for yourself, you will not know how to care for the people around you. Unless you understand yourself. Self-obligation, self-responsibility. The more you practice non-attachment, the more you have that in you, that kind of quality in you. So the more you have attachment, the more your mind become blinded. Layers of layers of this here. So that's why it's called a klesa. It's a klesa. So that's one of the klesa. The next klesa is what? You know it already. We studied so many times already. Anger. The first three poisons. Anger is the next great afflictions. Imagine that when you get angry, everything's blocked, right? If we all have experience about this anger, everything's blocked. Even the sky is beautiful, you never enjoy it. The walls turn upside down when you have anger. Strong emotions. And we can learn a lot about anger. We have to learn a lot. Anger itself is what? It's neutral. But you put your intention into anger. So that's why it becomes very intense. See? You put your attention into that. And then become intense. And then it's go back what? It's go back and burn yourself. The fire of anger. Go back and burn yourself. Burn yourself here, for example, a kid in school and anger, and he just get a gun and shot somebody. He just go back and burn himself. You see? If you and you get a knife, and then if you stab somebody, then you burn yourself. You see? And this cause, especially teenager in school, and this caused a lot of trouble for many teenagers, anger. And they don't know. They are pity. They don't know how to manage their anger. And even ourselves as an adult, if you don't know how, if you don't learn the way to recognize your anger, you still have that. You may be stronger in this affliction, in this klesa. And sometimes you imprison yourself in this anger. Resentment. Even as an adult, if we don't know, if nobody saw us how to manage our own anger. And nowadays, you know, this world, we've been ruined because of this energy. This kind of energy of anger. That is in Libya, right? What happened because of this? Anger in many people. And it's become a collective. And it's become an energy of that country. You see? And this energy ruined that country. Egyptian, for example. And we do create so much damage when we have this in us. Many people end their life because of anger. Of anger. That's why it's called great, big klesa. That's why it's called in Buddhism, we call it poison, toxins. And we, as a practitioner, every day we have to look into this. When you have this emotion, anger emotion, arise in you, how do you feel? You have to, as a practitioner, that is the tool we work with. We have the tool to work with this here. This is no exception. This energy everybody possesses it. Children, adolescents, adult, senior, half is here. And this energies of emotion cause so much damage in the world. Because we don't know, we don't learn the way to manage this. So meditation, looking deeply, is the best antidote for this. But meditation alone is not enough. You have to ask the five step that I have told you. If you have an anger energy in you, you have to recognize it. Don't deny. I say, I'm look like this. How do I, you say that I'm angry? Like that. We deny it when we have this energy. So we have to recognize this energy, accept this energy in us. Facing it, work with it, and you become strong. You become a non-violence in you. This energy is a violence energy in us, and it's caused destruction for the body and for the mind. And it's have a deep imprint in your consciousness when you have this. So in your meditations, you have to work with that. The second one. Or resentment. And this is a violence energies in us. Even in therapies, we work with this a lot. Deal with this a lot because many family, it's caused many damage for the family. Mm-hmm. And especially if you are parents, you do a lot of damage for your children. When the kid, they see you, both parents, in anger. And they don't know what to do. They are helpless. Some children, they just go into the restroom someplace and they lock themselves up or eat in their room. You see? Because they don't know the way to manage it. They don't know how to handle that. And you leave a lot of scar in them. And we all here, we sit all here, we somehow that witness in our family. I see that happen a lot in my family, but I learn not to do it. You know, if you're lucky, you're fortunate, you know the teaching, and you turn around. But if not, it could be with you forever, for many lifetimes. But unless you're lucky, you have the teacher, you have the community, you have a Sangha support, where you go and you share, open it up, and let it out. But some people, they hold it the whole life, and they become paralyzed because of this. This energy can paralyze your body and your mind and your thinking. Because you close yourself up. Close yourself up. And imagine that you store this in you day by day as become a collective, huge in you. It can be become a rocky mountain in you. If it were able to be something from, it can be, if it can form a rocky mountain, it can be a rocky mountain. It's like that. Because it have no form in us. So if you're able to transform this, working with this, you save yourself. And not only for yourself, but the people around you. And the one that you love, your family, your children. That's the most affecting you. Because they see you every day. And imagine that they see that on your face every day. And they have to live, some people have to live with that every day. disharmony, resentment in them. And how come, if you live with that, how can you not become very ill? You're not ill, born physically, but mentally ill. And that the person, that type of people, where they are becoming anti-society. And we have that in our society, anti-society. Too much anger. Don't know what to do. Either put it out on the society, they're no longer able to bear it for themselves. You see? And in psychology, we study this too as a therapist. We have to know how to manage it. Sometimes I say it, but I don't say it as in a Buddhist term, you know, just normal language, say that. And this is, doesn't matter, you are Christian, you are Muslim, you are Buddhist, you are Hindus, whatever, you have this in us. It's the human heritage. It's the human heritage. So we have to work with that. Otherwise, it becomes very toxic in us, you know. So when you drink alcohol, you know it's toxic. But this is more toxic than that, day by day. Because alcohol you can consume, you know, someday you consume it, someday you're not. Right? But this is as an energy, it's as a seed that in you. Then I mean it's in you day, every day. And it's growing. If we don't know how to transform, it's growing. It's very important. So in meditations, you have to look deeply into this. Meditations. That's how we work out. In Buddhism, we work a lot of with this. As a practice, you have to work with this every day. Every day. So I'll share one more and then you have some questions then. So this is the first klesa, second klesa. The third klesa, you already know it too, right? What is that? That's what it has. I use different name here. Start with a S-T-U. And what is else? You know it already, but you don't contemplate.
Stubborn.
Stupidity. Yeah. How spell it? Another name for it in Buddhism we call ignorance. Ignorance is a very generic term.
It's less offensive.
Less offensive. Isn't that sometimes we have to pay for a price for our ignorance, yeah? Yeah, but sometimes I pay big price for that. Sometimes I have to pay for that too.
Yeah.
Ignorance. Here is not knowing. Not knowing. You're not knowing just the nature of it. So when you not know, and then you grasp onto that. That's why if when you know, then you're not going to attach to that, right? Sometimes you know, we know it, but we know it by intellectual, right? Not experientially. We know it. And one of my professors just in the ethics class, and he said that you know the rule, but many people violate that. And he said, I remember what he said. He said, you can ethically, you can act in front of people. But even though you act in front of people ethically, it's not ethic. It's just only when you're alone. That's when it's caught you. If when you're alone, you do it ethically, then that's really true ethics. I can stay in front of you and I can say many things, but when I'm alone, that's the true challenge. And when you're alone, if you can do it when you're alone, you can practice diligently, then it's really true religion. But in a group, everybody practice together diligently is not, because we support each other, then easy. But when you're alone, then ignorance causes us. We get into trouble when we're alone. So when I look at this and I contemplate about, reflect on about the yogi or the solo practitioner, they are alone by themselves and they practice diligently. And that is the truth. They really make a self effort for themselves. When we come together, study, group together, it's much easier. We look after each other easily. But when you're alone by yourself, then you're able to practice, take care of yourself, do your obligations, your duty, then it's really true practitioner. So when you are not knowing, so have to be this. Trees always go together, hand in hand. Attachment, anger, and ignorance. And ignorance is the leading the way. If you don't know, that's why you attach. Right? And if you don't know, that's why you anger. If you know, then you're not. When you know, but when we know, but our knowing or our understanding is so surface that not have enough, not strong enough to carry us out of the dangerous situation. Not strong enough. Our understanding is too young and too fragile. And our habit energy, as Dave asked, habitual pattern is carrying us. Habitual pattern. Is they use the habit energy that carries us, overtaking us. So this, and you see in this Buddhism we call, it's in the category of six kleshas, but also have its own name, we call three poisons. In three poisons that poison our mind and our body. It's called Tamdok. Tam Sung Si. So when you go into a different category, and they are universals, all over. So if you go into the 51 mental formations, they are also in there. 51 mental formations in Buddhist psychology, they are in there. And now they are in the carrier of six kleshas, and they also have another name, three poisons. So you know it. So when you read through, say, oh, six kleshas, and you know what it is. Or you, when you read, oh, they mention three poisons, and you know what it is. And this is attachment, anger, and spirit is running our life very much. Running our life, we call sai sự, cuộc đời của mình. So if you get these three down, you are good. You are ready to go. I'm serious. 75% on the path, if you get this three down, three poison, you're good. Even as a Buddhist monk, you have to, every day, I contemplate on this, every day. Even some people come and give me money, I have to look at this. Whether I deceive myself or not, you see, even I can use them, I do it for a temple, would increase my attachment. You can use beautiful name, but doesn't matter. Down to earth, in your deep down.
So what's the cure for stupidity?
Oh, it's the cure? Insight.
Okay.
Wisdom. So when you have this, the three, then you have, if you have the wisdom, see, ignorance is not knowing. So wisdom is the antidote for that. Insight that penetrate. You have the insight, so that insight penetrate these three. But if you have the insights of impermanence, you can penetrate these three. It's not, it's there, but it's not like permanently in you, right? It's not permanent. If it's permanent, how can you transform it? How can you, you change it? See, it's not permanent. So even though it's in you, but you can change it, you can transform it. Either you can make it stronger, or you can lessen it day by practicing. In Buddhism, nothing is impermanent, a permanent. It's a flow. That's why you can transform, that's why you can change. If it's permanent, then you cannot become enlightened. You cannot become realized. Sam?
On attachment, does that attachment maybe apply to yourself as a person? Like you have a desire to be something more?
Mm-hmm. So attachment begin with us, not outside, not somewhere else. Have to be begin with us. In our mind, in our conscience, in our body. So even attached to this rope is still an attachment. A desire to have more of this rope, to make it, you know, forever long lasting, is still a grasping. So in Buddhism, everything begins with you. Not the Buddha, I know someone else, not Jesus. Enlightenment, realization have to begin with you. Suffering have to be begin with you. So whatever you have inside, internally, is projecting. Found you, projecting outside the world. So you have peaceful mind, and that peaceful mind projecting out on the world.
But aspiration is not necessarily attachment.
You have to distinguish this here. Aspiration. And desire or attachment. Grasping. So aspirations and desire is two different things. Attachment or grasping or sensual. It's too different. So aspiration, that means you still want it, but in more a positive sense. Aspiration here is not to make anything suffering. Not to make suffering. So aspiration is go along with bodhicitta. You have an aspirations for liberation, your own pain. In Vietnamese we call nguyện. Aspirations. And aspiration always go along with wisdom and faith. Faith. Tín hành. Faith here is not blind faith. And application. Once you have faith, then you put into applications. And this faith has to go with understanding, wisdom. And you have an aspiration. So for example, you have an aspiration to walk on the path of liberation, on the path of serving sentient beings. That's a good aspiration. Aspiration is not a is not overtaken by this attachment. So that's why sometimes words can be confusing, and it can be leading to a misunderstanding. And another word is vow. But this in the West, we don't. It's different. We in Buddhism we call you use more aspirations. Aspirations. So you have to understand the context of that. Some people, they are very afraid of vow. But they're not afraid of aspiration. Right? Vow to be together, aspiration to be together is different. You know? So you have any other questions that confuse you? So you can, if you have questions, you can ask. And also Dale, he read Tay's book and he have some questions about notions, ideas, concepts. These are interchangeable. When Tay says that it's interchangeable. The notion of some things. I have a notion about you, but that may be a wrong notion. I have an idea about you, but that be a wrong idea. I haven't have an idea about myself. That if I don't understand myself, then how can? Maybe on surfacely I have an idea about you, but maybe deep down not. Right? I may have some surface notion about you, but deep down maybe not. A concept is something. A concept of something. So those three words is interchangeable. You can replace it. It's say the same thing. But maybe in the West, maybe different. Maybe have different notion and idea, maybe slightly different. But in Buddhism, we can use this. In teachings, we can use it interchangeable. So if when you read something that it's making not clear, you can write note. and ask. I think that will be benefit a lot of people. Don't afraid to ask, and don't praise to. That's why we come together, is to share, you know, to make it clear, to bring side the light on whatever we don't understand. I may not understand correctly because English is not my language. Even my Vietnamese language, I maybe not understand clearly. So we still in very limitations about our own understanding of the language. So we can shine the light together, we can make it clear together as we have a collective understanding of each other of together. This would be good. It's not one person benefit, but many people benefit. So if you read something that you don't, is not clear to you, just write down. And we can come and contemplate together and shed light together. Like Dhammakaya, if you have to, you can understand it on intellectually, but Dhammakaya, you have to penetrate that, the teachings about Dhammakaya. The Buddha have three forms of the three body. Hua Teng, and transformation body. Hua Teng. Pháp Teng, I mean Dhammakaya. Dhammakaya body. It's the body of the nature of itself. And the Buddha body. And this may be hard to understand, but if you practice slowly day by day, you will penetrate. Even this pen, they have his own body, and even they have Dhammakaya body too. But we don't know, because we just see it as a pen, you know? And that's what I understand. Because otherwise, is this pen or somehow that connect to us? You see? But if you see it, it's connect to us. Because it's making of earth. One element is making up, it's composed of earth element. And in our body is also earth element. It's the flesh, the bone. And you see that? And it's connect. And even the ink that we write, you see, is water. Right? And in our own body we have water. You see? And then that's why the teaching of being interdependent. Interdependent correlation is there. And you see that the pen and you is not separate. But once you understand it, and when you understand this, you become very light in your body and your mind. You take things as it come. You make everything make sense to you once you understand, penetrate that. But you have to, as I say, you have to practice day by day, contemplate moment by moment in order for this to become alive in you. Tất thành một cái sự sống, sức sống trong mình. Okay, we've, anybody have any other questions? So next time I will share another three klesas for you, because we have six klesas. I already shared with you three klesas. So think about that, contemplate that in your life. Once every day you make have some time to come, and this teaching become real and alive in you. But if you live your life and very busy, it's hard. Because you occupy by many external, your own business, then it's really hard. Even though you study your whole life, that's hard to get a grip, a glimpse on this. And I can share a thousand times, but still, rock still rocks. You have to see rock in a way that rock is not rocks. And then 30 years later, you see rock as rock. That's good. Yes. I tell you the story already, right? That the one of the young students said that 30 years ago I see rock as rock, and that 30 years later I still rock is not rocks. And 30 years later, I see rock as rock. Same. Very deep teachings. But now it's different. So from now 30 years, I see you as you. Now I see you as you. And maybe 2 years later, I see you as not you. 4 years later, I see you as you. Then it's different. Okay, so we conclude here, and we will have some time to practice together, meditation together. That's the gist. Is sharing with you is to help us to look deeply into the teachings. But the important is how you work with it and how you digest that, and thus become who you are, and just make the teachings alive in you. So I will invite Thuy Sarabel here, and then we to conclude today's sharing. So once again, thank you for your listening.